The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome to Bear and Balance. I'm Jeff Berkus, a writer for Windy City Gridiron, and I'm joined by the editor of that fine website, Lester A. Wiltfong Jr. Lester, the Bears continue to score points, and they continue to lose football games. How are you feeling after this latest loss?
This is a rough one. I mean, it's like, I think part of it is the Justin Fields impending injury. You know, we haven't heard anything official from that yet, but that kind of, you know, really, really soured the taste in our mouths when the game ended there, because we don't know what's going to happen with the future, because we were enjoying some football where at least the offense was looking fun to watch because of so much good stuff from Justin Fields. But this game, it wasn't quite as explosive. Yeah, there were still some points there, 24 points, you know, but it wasn't quite the way the last few games were. The run game wasn't, you know, as there were no records set this week. It was just like kind of like, come on, guys. You know, you got to give us a record at least happen. If they're going to lose, give us some fun.
There was a record set.
Oh, it's going to be a bad one, isn't it?
Well, Cordarrelle Patterson extended his record in the record books. He's a former Bear.
Yeah.
And it happened against the Bears. So, I mean, there's something there. There's something up for the record books there. Yes, it was a frustrating game for me, because I will admit to doing a little schedule peeping. And as I look at the schedule, the Bears play the Jets next. The Jets have a good defense, and they have a pretty good infrastructure. I think they're playing okay football. I mean, they play pretty brutal against the Patriots, but that's a good defense. And, you know, they have some quarterback controversy. I mean, maybe they can take advantage of that, but I don't know. And they got the Packers. We've seen that movie, right? I mean, again, I think the gap between the Bears and the Packers is not as big as what a lot of people wanted to think it was at the beginning of the year, and maybe they have a chance at that one. Then they play the Eagles. Then they play the Bills. Those games are not going to be fun for a lot of reasons. We're going to have to find an angle to get through those, or we're going to have to, I don't know, drink or something. So, you know, the next four games aren't going to be nearly as easy or winnable as this game in Atlanta was. I kind of wanted the Bears to show out there. They had turnover advantage. They had time of possession advantage. They had a lot of things going for them. A couple of things that did not go for them, and we will maybe get into some of those, I'm sure, throughout the episode. But we always start in the trenches, because that's where football is played. Everything else is just running around, you know? And so this year, our friends at Portillo's, they're sponsoring that. I'm back from this little trip that I was at, hanging out with EJ and on the left coast and eating smoked salmon and all that. And I won't show the addresses. I've got a couple of envelopes ready to go that are going to be sent out tomorrow to our last two winners. So thank you guys for getting in your Portillo's Trench tribute to us on Twitter, on YouTube, on email, 2ndcitygridiron@gmail.com. Wherever you get your Bear and Balance, throw that in there. Let us know who your player of the game was. This week, I believe it's my turn to go first. Yeah. Trench tribute to me this week, I'm going with Riley Reiff. I actually didn't think it was particularly close. He looked pretty solid to me. I didn't see him really give up any pressure. There's one where a guy cut in front of his face and he kind of took it with it, but that looked like the blocking scheme where they just sort of all stepped to the left. And then that kind of Fields stepped up and ran into the back of him. I don't really think that's on Reiff. Looked pretty good in the run game. They definitely ran to his side and over, you know, right tackle, and they got some big gains. He had a nice block at one point to spring an explosive run, and I thought overall he looked really solid. And so for me, I think there's a reason why they went to Reef, and I think there's a reason why they are sticking with Reef, but Borum kind of sit back in that swing role. I think that that makes a lot of sense to me. Riley Reef for me, Trench tribute this week. Who do you got?
I like Reef. That's a nice pick. I was close to going that way. It's just rough because, like, besides Reef, the one vet, I think other guys in that O-line had some rough games. I know Braxton Jones got called out quite a bit on social media. With Braxton Jones, his thing is, I want to touch on him real quick before I get into my guy. He's a steady player until he's not, and his downs are really down. Like, it looks really bad. But that's how most O-line is. You know, they're unnoticed until they make something really bad. But with Jones as a rookie, his mistakes are pretty bad. I tried looking at the defensive line, and the defense played better this week, you know, but, you know, I thought about going Justin Jones, but he had the flag early. Then I'm like, you know what? Let's just go back to an old reliable. Patrick Scales.
There he is.
Long snapper. The such an outstanding, exactly. The celebration. It was just so joyful to see Patrick Scales doing his thing there. It was, of course, on the DeAndre Houston Carson peanut punch. Jack Sambo recovered it. Patrick Scales knew it all along. He was up celebrating, hopping around. He was down there making a play. And, you know, it wasn't just that play. You know, the few other punts that he had, he was down there. He was down there making plays. He was involved. He was engaged. But I had to give it to Patrick Scales just for that celebration alone.
The celebration was elite. I actually had that as a potential candidate in a later category.
I knew it.
I love the celebration. Do you remember the first season of All or Nothing? That was the Cardinals season. Did you watch this on Amazon by any chance?
I did not catch that one.
So you might remember from the highlight, but there's this play where Falcons, the Cardinals score a big touchdown. Guys running down the sideline, and the backup quarterback, Carson Palmer, was the starter, and I believe it was Drew Stanton was the backup quarterback, and he's running down the sideline, and he's like whipping his right, and then like the guy kind of passes him, and he just does this like a little shimmy, and he's so excited, and I love that, right? It's just this like, he's, you know, these are grown men, they're playing a game, it's a multi-billion-dollar business, you know, so it's all that, but there's still some fun element to it, right? And these guys get pumped up. He loved to see that emotion. That's what triggered in my mind when I saw Patrick Scales do that. I was like, oh, that's like that little stand, that little shimmy. It was just great. He just popped up. He gave, you know, gave the sign. He helped the refs out to say, hey, the ball's going this way. Thought that was great. Absolutely. Great choice for Trench Tribute. I'm gonna move on to Tweet of the Week. And for me, I am highlighting Courtney Cronin, so the new ESPN reporter this year, who I think has been doing a great job. She says, Matt Eberflus said Justin Fields is day-to-day, but would not rule out the possibility of his injury being season-ending. That's quite the discrepancy. And I wanted to bring this in because, like, let's talk about the injury right up top. Looked like he may have been having an issue with his shoulder, and that's the injury that I think that they're referring to. It also seemed like there may have been something going on in the legs. You know, some would say maybe the hamstring, you know, he was getting stretched out on the sideline. He's getting beat up. You can tell that there's some heavy legs here. You can tell that that shoulder was really hurting him. There was clearly it was distracting him in the last series. I mean, to the point where I'm not sure it was very valuable for him to be in there at that point because he was clearly hurting and favoring that. And so my question to you is, if Justin Fields is not 100%, would you sit him against the Jets, the Packers, you got a bye week, the Eagles, the Bills? Like, what sense does it make to put out a less than 100% Justin Fields if those are the teams that you're playing that have pretty good front sevens?
Yeah, I mean, it has to be considered, you know, but man, if he's good to go, you got to put him out there. I mean, I think if he's not 100% this week, I think it might make sense to sit him. Maybe sit him through the bye, just kind of get that extra week of recovery. But, you know, you got to bring it back after that. I mean, there's just no point. You know, the offense is kind of conservative as it is. You know, maybe now what you do is you scale back some of the design quarterback runs and you go a little bit more run heavy with your with your tailbacks. Maybe get Kerry Blassen game the ball once in a while. You know, work the quick game a little bit. You know, just kind of redo the game plan to take some of that stuff we saw them that they put in after that mini buy, which is more of the Fields designed runs. Maybe scale that back a little bit, keep him healthy. And you know what? In the long run, if they do that, it may be better for him because now it's going to have him force him to work more on the quick game, something we haven't really seen the Bears really do too much of, you know, slants, you know, the bubbles have always been part of what they do. But, you know, I just think that you got to play him. I mean, those reps are so valuable for a young quarterback. But, man, it's scary to think that, you know, if he's not 100%, you know, what would this offense be without him?
So from an entertainment value standpoint, clearly, we would like to see Justin Fields out there. From a developmental standpoint, I think there's an argument. I think we may have seen what we could see out of Justin Fields and the surrounding cast. Maybe there's something else that you can get out there. I think we may have just reached the point where, okay, we found the easy button. We kept hitting it. Now we kind of broke the easy button. So do we roll it back out there with the broken easy button and try to run a different type of offense that maybe he's not the best at right now? Or do we kind of save that roll in later in the year or later in the off season and sort of restart with what we know now? I mean, he's put out enough tape at this point to feel pretty good about a season. I know there's a number of games left, right? I'm not trying to say there's, you know, that we're done here. There's six games left, but I think that there is an argument to be made, and I think I want to make it, that if he is not 100%, I don't want him out there. And I know no one's 100% right now, so maybe I'm just arguing, you know, something that can't be. But I think if he's really hurting, there is no point in pushing him at this point. And I really wouldn't put him out there against the Jets. I want to see him against the Packers because that's the best chance to beat the Packers, and I want to beat the Packers. But it may be the most sense to at least take the next 2 weeks off, get that third week for a bye, and see him after the bye with the two Super Bowl contending teams that you're playing.
Yeah, I think that may be the good plan. I mean, we saw a couple years ago with Mitch Trubisky. He had a shoulder dinged up, and they kind of sat him for a few weeks and came back. And, you know, it may have stolen some of his athleticism where he didn't want to run as much. You know, Justin Fields is obviously a different player, a different person. You know, we have to see how this affects him long term. But I mean, it's something that's in the back of your mind. I mean, if your shoulder, it's not his throwing shoulder, it's his left shoulder. But if it's something that's in the back of his mind where he doesn't want to injure that again, maybe it does change his running style. You know, we'll have to wait and see. I mean, it's a tough one, you know. But I think, like you said, the bye week might make the most sense. Kind of reevaluate him. But yeah, I guess you're right though. I think we have seen what we're going to see out of Justin Fields. The pass pro overall is bad. They've had to scheme around some stuff there, and you can't always scheme around protection issues. You can't always roll them out. You can't always do the boots. You got to do something, you know, otherwise you're just, you know, there's no options, you know? So maybe we have seen enough out of Justin Fields this season to kind of shut him down for a few weeks and, you know, let him, you know, live to fight another day, so to speak.
Your tweet this week.
So last night I was kind of going through the numbers to prep for my my snap counts and stats article, and I realized that Bears defense had no sacks, just one quarterback hit and three tackles for loss. That's out of the front seven, mostly there, obviously. So Tom Fien at TFane21 tweeted, "I want to be mad at Allen Williams, but they have no one on that side of the ball, it feels like," which is true. I mean, they lost Khalil Mack early. Before the season started, they traded Robert Quinn, traded Roquan Smith. Not the most talented group. So I wanted to ask you a question. This comes down to the X's and O's versus the Jimmys and Joes. And there are a lot of people on both sides of that spectrum here. I've always felt like, look, there's only so much a scheme can do. If you don't have the horses, you know, how mad can we be at Allen Williams? I know Coach Flus talked about he was going to spend more time on the defensive meeting rooms this last week. They have picked up some blitzing intensity the last few games, but you know, there's only so much you can do if you don't have the guys there. So where do you fall on this? X's and O's or Jimmy's and Joe's?
I'm a Jimmy's and Joe's guy. I think you're, you know, this league is all professional football players. And so at some point there are some inches here and there with scheme and certainly good play callers and, you know, sniffing something out and seeing something on tape and all that stuff makes sense to me. But at the end of the day, you have to have the guys go make the play. And if you are out manned at every single level, then it's going to show up. And when I was watching the defense, I was watching the defensive line, trying to find a Trench Tribute, because I'm sick of giving it to an offensive lineman every week. And I was struck by the fact that Justin Jones is the only player that you really feel good about on this defensive line right now. And he's, to me, he's clearly the best player on that defensive line. Yeah. I don't actually think it's close. And if he's your fourth best defensive lineman, you're feeling pretty good. If he's your third best defensive lineman, you're okay. If he's your second best defensive lineman, you're probably not a very good front seven. He's our best. He's the Chicago Bears' best defensive lineman, and it's not particularly close. And that's, you know, I've been saying Trevis. Is it Trevis?
It was Trevis on Sunday.
It was Trevis yesterday. Okay.
I thought it was Trevis too, but
Gibson. Yeah. He got a lot of airtime. He's been very inconsistent. He flashes every once in a while. Been very inconsistent. I'm not going to write much on Dominique Robinson. He's a rookie. He flashes. Okay. But Al-Khadim Muhammad has been a waste of snaps. That's been a very rough signing. Armon Watts is a rotational player. Nothing wrong with that. But this is not like a guy that's like, yep, this is a big-time starter. You know, rotational player, nice pickup. Who is it? Angelo Blackson? Like, he's a guy. Right. Like, again, rotational player, nothing wrong with that. But these are the guys that you're like, well, is that guy the second best defensive lineman on the team? Like, that is a rough group of players to be having that particular conversation about. And so regardless of your scheme, you can't magically make those guys better run defenders, better pass rushers. Right. That it just doesn't happen. You can only cover up so many holes. And when your whole unit is full of guys that are, you know, maybe they'd be the 11th best guy or the 10th best guy on a lot of defenses, and you've got a lot of those guys, well, what are you going to do, right? We saw a great game from Jack Sanborn last week. Great game. He was put in a position to succeed, and he did. Arthur Smith put him under the microscope a little bit, said, okay, let's see if you can chase down Tyler Allgeier. Let's see if you can chase down Cordarrelle Patterson. Let's see what you can do against those guys if I stress you with outside runs. He didn't really do it, right? Because he can't. Like, that's not his game. He's more of a smart, instinctive linebacker that's able to more so in the middle or fill a gap, but he's not going to beat you to the outside. So you have limitations with the physical skills of your players on the defense, particularly this front seven, that is going to limit whatever scheme you put them in. And so you're just going to have to continue to just kind of push buttons to try to make up for that. So that's where I'm at. I don't know what he can do.
Yeah. I haven't seen the actual blitz percentage, but you can tell it's picked up these last few weeks and they've had to. I mean, you lose Robert Quinn, who wasn't having the best year. I think he still only has one sack on the season. You know, Roquan Smith, he's gone, but you know, he was an outstanding football player, made plays. You know, you have to do something to generate pressure. You literally have no pass rush. You're starting four rookies on the defensive side of the ball. And while, you know, Brisker and Gordon are second round draft picks, are very talented football players, they're still prone to the occasional rookie mistake. They're still not playing as fast as they're going to play eventually once the instincts completely kick in and they know what they're doing. Jack Sanborn, I thought, like I said, was good 2 weeks ago. I think he had 9 tackles this last week. He was good. He was active. You know, but you could still tell he's still a rookie. He's still trying to come into his own here. And plus, he's an undrafted free agent. You know, I mean, could it be a long-term fixture? Possibly, if the talent around him is better. You know, we'll find out more, you know, next year when the offseason happens. But I just can't bring myself to criticizing Alan Williams at this point because he has nothing to work with.
No, I mean, that's one of those things. I'm not trying to be hard on Jack Sanborn. We figured that's what was going to happen with Arthur Smith being a pretty good offensive mind. But again, that's one of those conversations. If Jack Sanborn's your 10th or 11th best player on defense, you feel pretty good.
Yeah.
Where is he right now? I don't know. I haven't thought about it in those ways, but he might be fifth, and that's not good. Well, we don't want that, right? He's an undrafted free agent. the linebacker devalued position, all that kind of stuff. But still, that's not the best. That's not what you really want. All right, let's move on to stats. Caught up in a numbers game. 12 for 114.
12 for 114.
12 for 114 is the differential of penalties and penalty yards for the Bears and their last two opponents. So in this game, the Bears were flagged 7 times for 56 yards against only 2 times for 13 yards for the Falcons. Last week, 9 flags on the Bears for 86 yards against 2 for 15. That's 16 flags for the Bears, 142 yards of penalty yards against 4 for 28. That is a huge discrepancy. And I don't want to be the referee guy. I really don't. I hate this. I don't think the Bears are less disciplined than the other teams. I don't think that there's a clear, like, oh, this is the Raiders from the 80s where they lead the league in penalties all the time because they're an undisciplined team. This doesn't seem like that at all. This seems like the Bears are getting everything that's on the field, they're getting called, and then a couple more. And then they're not throwing the flag on the other team on some pretty obvious situations. And I think it came up again in some pretty big spots with some potential late hits, two of them. One in the early third quarter, 10, that's the one everybody's talking about, that double sack on Fields where he's down on a knee and then he gets crushed. And then there was another one where he slid and he got hit in the head. That was in the last drive, the fourth quarter. What are we doing? Like, at least protect number one. I mean, some of the other stuff, I hate it. It really irritates me. The pass interference is not called the same way. You know, I'm not going to get into holding Twitter or anything like that, but let's at least protect number one and let's call that both ways. That'd be great.
Yeah, the quarterback spot. I mean, it's been happening, you know, pretty much this whole season. You know, it's just I think a lot of it is the refs look at him as, you know, he's I kind of relate it to how Shaquille O'Neal was officiated back when he played basketball. Just too big, too strong. Hack a Shaq, you know. He would get hit all the time because he was too big, too strong. I think they look at running quarterbacks a lot, and they feel, well, they're running quarterback. So they kind of, in their mind, officiate them differently when it's just not fair because Tyler Heinicke from Washington, you know, last week, a similar to play to one with Fields. I think it was Clay Harbor. I think he tweeted out the side by side showing the hits. Similar play, same thing. One got called, one didn't. We saw in this game a Bears player kind of touched the ankle of Marcus Mariota, and he got flagged for that. But then you got Justin Fields kind of, you know, not getting the call. And the Bears each week they send these plays to the league office. You know, and, you know, occasionally, you know, we'll find out through social media, through media members, they'll get the word that, yeah, the league agreed it was wrong, you know, and then the Bears players are starting to get pissed off themselves. I mean, I think it was Brisker had a quote talk about he's they're getting sick and tired of their guy not getting the call. And, you know, at some point, like I said, we don't want to always just talk about the rest, but when now the players are doing it, the coaches are doing it, it comes up every time in the press conference. You know, at some point, you know, what do they say? The squeaky wheel gets the grease. Maybe you just got to keep talking. And then maybe at some point the refs will be like, okay, we got to start calling these a different way.
You hope that this stuff evens out, and you hope that maybe it evens out next year, right? Like where there's more calls that go the Bears' favor that, you know, and help decide these games. You know, we've kind of written this year off in terms of win losses anyway. So, you know, again, maybe this is in the long run not a big deal, but this is a concerning development for me that we continue to have to talk about this. Yeah. So many of these bad calls, and then now this is not only bad calls, but just lopsided. Like this was just absolutely lopsided. And for a team that is supposed to be a disciplined team, I don't see it. I don't see that the last two games, the Bears were 12 additional penalties, 114 additional penalty yards worse than their opponents. Just ridiculous. But what did you come up with?
For me, I got a number is number 15 this week. And that is the Bears total sacks on the season. Kind of ties into my tweet. That is ranked 31st in the entire NFL. Only the Raiders are worse, but the Raiders have played in one less game. They have 15 or 13 sacks, but at some point I'm sure that'll even out because the Bears have no one to get after the quarterback. At least the Raiders have Crosby, who's a pretty good pass rusher. Just they don't have the guys. You know, they don't have no one to get after the quarterback. And I had a bonus number. That's 31. That's the number of quarterback hits the Bears have. And that is dead last in the NFL. So they're not getting sacks. They're not getting hits. The Browns are next worst, and they have 40 quarterback hits. So we're talking, you know, 15 sacks, 31 quarterback hits from the Bears, mostly front seven. It's just awful. And then we talk about Roquan being gone. He had 2.5 sacks. Those are gone now. Robert Quinn had a sack. That's gone now. The Bears' leading sacker this year is safety, Saquon Brisker. That's not good if your safety's leading your team in sacks. That's horrible.
No, it's not good. A rookie safety.
Rookie safety.
Yeah, that's sad. Why did you make us sad?
I know. Well, I had the Patrick Scales on top there. Yeah. Nice, fun, excitement. So I'm like, well, I'm going to bring it down here in the middle right before we go to break. So, or the field report, which is going to be, oh, it's going to be a bad one too. So, oh man, this middle part of the show here.
It's rough, man. I don't know why you did that to us. Those are bad. Those are bad numbers. And it reinforces what we were talking about earlier with the Jimmys and Joes stuff. Like, you just don't have the talent. You just don't have the talent of guys that can win up front. And when you don't have that, you're not going to create the pressures. You're not going to have the hits, and you're not going to have the sacks. And that's really showing itself out. And it doesn't really matter how good your secondary is if they're having to cover 5 seconds every time there's a drop back. So just the way it is. But let's move on to the Fields report. 14 of 21 for 153, one touchdown, one interception, one missed long touchdown to Darnell Mooney. Oh man, that sucks. That one was rough. 18 carries for 85 yards and a touchdown and took 4 sacks. I don't know, man. Like, this, the yards should have been more, should have been there, right? Especially when you hit Mooney, you're over 200. You've got that last drive should have been extended with the penalty. You know, maybe we see a little bit more here. Bad throw at the end, but was it a bad throw, or was it like he didn't see Montgomery kind of underneath? Montgomery went up to elevated and got tipped. And I mean, the little jump pass hasn't really been the best option since Bronco Nagurski did it, you know, in the 1930s. So
Tim Tebow had some success with it for a little while there
in the pros.
Maybe not the pros.
Yeah, this is more of a Florida thing. Yeah. But maybe we don't do the jump pass as much. But again, I don't want to be too picky on just the one interception. But probably got run too much in this game. I mean, again, the easy button got hit a little bit too often. And at the end there, I don't know what the heck was happening. Where clearly he wasn't feeling right. He did not look at all like normal Justin Fields when he was running the ball there. And that last drive just looked pretty sad. A little bit of like he was supposed to hand it off to Montgomery on one of those, but then just didn't. So I don't know what's happening. You know, the injury distracted, what it was. But just overall, it looked like we're, you know, seeing some pretty good play out of Fields early. And then it just really tailed off there at the end.
His second to last drive, he was really good. Like 6 of 6, 6 of 7. You know, he was moving his guys around. He was scrambling, making plays. He had Montgomery down the sideline, that a play that he extended.
Oh, that was a sweet throw.
He had the Equanimee St. Brown. He kind of waited, and he had hit. It was a big scramble drill. So the second to last drive, he was really clicking as a passer. And I'm like, oh, man, he's showing some of the skills he has here. I was excited to see him get the ball back. And then, of course, things kind of went weird there with the plays. And, you know, you talked about that interception. And, you know, for our listeners and our viewers who aren't on Twitter, you know, this was the talk of Twitter a lot today. Was this kind of showed, you know, the screenshots and in the video, it did look like he may have been thrown to Darnell Mooney, who was coming right to left, as opposed to Montgomery coming the other direction. And, you know, it was just an unfortunate play. You know, Fields did say the pass was going to Montgomery. Maybe Fields is kind of, you know, sticking up for his guy there. But, you know, either way, the pick happened. You know, it is what it is. You know, Mooney would have he was there. I mean, he was open for the play. He beat his guy. Just a tough break. We talked about, you know, a game of inches. You know, if he does not tip that ball, now that goes to Mooney. Mooney catches it. Who knows what's happening here? So a lot of weird things this season for the Bears. They're close, you know, just not close enough.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he is covered for Monty. Maybe that's where he threw the ball, but it sure looked like he was probably going to Montgomery, going to Mooney a little bit further on. But yeah, I mean, if you're Montgomery, you don't know that, and you're going to make the play. I assume there's a little bit of a scramble drill at that point, and that's why they were kind of in the same space. Otherwise, you wouldn't design it like that because you wouldn't want that confusion. But
it could have a mesh concept. They wanted the cross to kind of, you know, maybe pick off the guy, but just the timing of it.
I don't think it was a mesh play, though, right?
No, I feel like a little scramble drill cross where they just kind of, you know, kind of crossing a few yards behind. I don't know, just one of those things where they wanted to get a guy open, and just the timing of it. Again, we've seen it all year. The timing is a little off here, a little off there. Maybe next year that's a play that goes for a big gainer for the Bears.
Yeah, I think overall, again, we're not sure what the health of that hamstrings or shoulder or whatever else might be hurting Justin Fields is at that point. Don't know how many more games, if he'll miss any time or if he does, like how long that'll be. Again, Matty Fuller says day to day might miss the whole year, right? Like that's pretty much puts everything on the table. So if this is the last, just hypothetically, if this is the last we see of Justin Fields this year, or maybe for a while, I think that one of the things, like you said, that second to last drive looked great. There were times that throw down the field to Montgomery was the thing of beauty. That's going to be on the highlight reel for a while. That was a great throw. I think we need to respect the fact that the Falcons played a pretty good defensive football game.
They did.
Yeah. Okay. And that they came out and said, okay, this is what, you know, Dean Pease has been around the league for a long time. They're a defensive coordinator, not a talented unit. Let's put that out there. This is not a talented Falcons defense. There's a couple players that are pretty good. And I think, didn't they lose AJ Terrell at some point in that game? So I'm not even sure he was out there the whole game, and he's probably their second best defender. So see, beyond Grady Jarrett, I don't think a lot of Bears fans can probably name three Falcons defenders, right? Like before that game for sure. And it's just not a talented unit. They're very similar to the Bears in that way, is that the Bears are honestly more talented than the Falcons defense, in my opinion. And the scheme really did help corral Justin Fields, particularly in the run game. And then they got after him pretty well and took advantage of an uneven pass pro from the offensive line. And so once that happens, once the defensive coordinator puts out a blueprint for how you slow down this scheme, this whatever this attack is, you go up against a more talented unit, which the Jets are.
Yeah.
Then it's on the offensive coordinator then to like start throwing out the counters and start shifting. This league overturns regularly, and you have to keep kind of shifting and adapting as you move along in the season. So if it's Trevor Siemian for a while, we will see a different offense because Trevor Siemian can't run this offense that Justin Fields runs. But if Fields takes the field in New Jersey against the Jets, then we need to see something from Luke Getsy. We need to see that next step in the evolution.
Agreed. You know, it's just rough the way the whole thing kind of played out there. You know, when the game ended, you know, besides getting X-rays in his shoulder, he had an IV. He was doing some cramping. You talk about his hamstrings. You saw him at the sideline getting worked on quite a bit. You know, it was just he seemed really labored the whole game. You know, it just, he talked about last week how his legs were tired, you know, and, you know, they're running him a lot. And one thing the Falcons did, I noticed, is they were really disciplined in their pass rush. They were making sure they were contained. You know, they did not over-penetrate. It was like you said, it was a really smart game plan from the Falcons. And like we always say, those guys are paid to make plays too. And, you know, they came up big when they had to.
All right, Lester, let's take a quick break. After the break, we're going to get into everybody's favorite segment, the Three Bears.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, "Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back." If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, "Everything okay in there?" "Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog."
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, Lester, let's get into the three bears: hot bowl of porridge, cold bowl of porridge, and just right. Hot bowl of porridge this week to me, for me, goes to Cole Kmet's catch.
Yep.
What happened? What happened there? Like, just he just reaches out with one hand, stabs it, pulls it down, gets hit as he's, you know, he has it, split second, gets hit. Maintains possession. It goes, I mean, what? Who is this guy? Who the heck is Cole Kmet?
I had the same thing. My hot Cole Kmet, that catch. I mean, it was just, you know, the one-handed stab was great, right? But you talked about it. He got hit as he was making the catch. So maybe he bobbles that in years past. You know, just a great catch. Three receptions, 35 yards. Not the biggest game for Kmet, but you know, if he's showing the rapport with Justin Fields now, you know, that this whole season, it started a little slow, but now we're kind of seeing the trust. We're seeing him go to him when he's there. We're seeing him go to him when he's not completely open. And why wouldn't you? I mean, Cole Kmet is a big, big target. You know, he has a big catch radius. He's strong. Maybe he's learning how to use his body a little better to box out defenders. You know, we've talked about Cole Kmet this whole season. He was drafted at 21 years old. You know, he's 23 years old. He's still one of the younger players on the Bears roster. There are rookies on this team older than Cole Kmet is, and Cole Kmet's a third-year pro. Okay, he is. His blocking is still a work in progress. I think he's improved there. You know, he's a big target for this offense. He's never going to be Travis Kelce. He's never going to be Gronk. This is what a lot of fans thought of when they seen him drafted. And look, that's not who he is. The comp a lot of people made was Kyle Rudolph. You know, he made a couple Pro Bowls in his time. He became a pretty good blocker, a nice target in the red zone. You know, if that's who he ends up, that is not a bad draft pick. Second round pick, regardless what you're thinking of the whole thing there. Oh, they should have had him, That's in the past. You know, who is he now? He's competent. He's productive. He is becoming, can I say he's becoming a go-to guy for Justin Fields? He seems to be like he is that because, let's be honest, there's not a lot of other go-to guys on the team. But, you know, if Cole Kmet's going to be a reliable guy there, that's a win.
Yeah, as much as we both loved Darnell Mooney coming into the year, it sure looks like Cole Kmet is the number one option for Justin Fields when he needs a play, right? At least lately. And, you know, we came into the year, we came out of camp being like, yeah. Oh, man. Cole Kmet's going to have a year. And we got some flack from that, from some people that we know, and, you know, and some off the record chat stuff. Like, you guys are crazy. And I'm like, I'm telling you, like they're really going to feature this guy. And then it was nothing. I mean, the slow start. September was so slow and nothing seemed to make sense. Just, you know, he wasn't getting open. He wasn't getting a lot of targets. And it was like, well, I feel dumb. I feel dumb because I saw this. I spoke it out loud And then what happens? Nothing, right? So he's like, well, okay, maybe we were wrong. And we said that. And like, okay, maybe this wasn't really happening. We talked to him on Bears Over Beers. EJ really eviscerated him, you know, just kind of.
It was deserved after that game, you know, for sure.
And so now you have, you know, flash forward. This is why you don't close books on people, right? And he's really coming into his own. Definitely looks like a guy that you're going to probably want to pay some money to stick around, because he's one of the players that have proven that he can play professional football on this team. So you probably want him here, and you certainly want him here if he's got a good rapport with Justin Fields. So yeah, I think that the catch, there's some pretty good highlights so far this year. Let's not lie to ourselves. There's a couple good catches. There's some amazing runs. Like, he's not the only one, but it's going on the highlight reel. Like, we make a highlight reel at the end of the year, this is on it.
Yeah, for sure. The 2022 Bears featuring Cole Kmet.
All right, let's flip it around. Let's talk about the Cold Bowl. So I can go a few different places. I need to give it to Luke Getsy here.
Yes. We're right here.
Okay, we're on the same page.
Yeah.
This is hitting the easy button too much and breaking it. You can't do it. You gotta have more in store. You have to have, you know, hey, I found my fastball. Fastball's working great. Everybody's teeing off on your fastball. Throw the slider. Throw a curveball. Yeah. Like, you gotta have a counter off of this thing. And you can't just keep going back to it. And particularly at the end there, again, I don't know what happened, but it looked like you were putting your quarterback in harm's way at the end when he wasn't 100%. That was just not really, you know, the defense was, well, it was supposed to be a handoff to Montgomery on second and nine.
Yeah.
In just less than 2 minutes left in the game, trailing. Like, that's not a very good defense. Like, I don't want to hear that either. So Getsy he's been on a heater, right? Like, he's had a really nice run here. It seemed maybe too convenient to call him out when things break down here, but this is a guy that, you know, Bears fans started to get worried that Luke Getsy is going to have a head coaching job next year. And right, like, he's going to be gone. And you see all these like funny tweets about how he hates puppies and all this kind of stuff, right? Just to throw people off of hiring him away. He's going to have some ups and downs. I understand that. But this was a down for me. This was not having that counter in your back pocket and pulling it out. He needed to do that this week.
First and 20 runs. I've seen enough of it. Second and 10 runs, I've seen enough of it. I understand you can't always do the same thing, but I saw a stat a couple weeks ago, and you know, the Bears were among the league leaders in second and 10 runs, and I can't imagine that's changed much, you know, in the last two games. He gets a little conservative at 8.5. There was a third and I forget what it was, but you know, they were trying to drive down for the field goal. And I understand, hey, you're in field goal range, let's not do nothing stupid. And they ran a Justin Fields sweep around the edge. Okay, why not roll him out, give him a nice 1-2 read, and if it's not there, you know, then you run. You know, if something's there, you know, now you're cooking, you have a chance for a touchdown instead of a field goal. He gets a little too conservative. And now, look, part of this could be Matt Eberflus in his ear, hey, let's be smart, let's be safe, let's make sure we get 3 out of this. That's possible. And but still, you talked about the end of the game sequence, you know. The excuse that, oh, it was supposed to be a handoff to Montgomery on 2nd and 9 with 1:42 left. That's not what you think it's going to be. That's to me, I tweeted out that's a dumber play call than the draw, you know, like, why would you do that? You know, I mean, it's like you have Justin Fields. I talked about it. The drive prior, he was on fire, looking good. He was orchestrating his offense. So then you go out and you call those two run plays to start off the sequence. Not good play calling.
It was like, you know, you got accused of stealing a candy bar from a gas station. And you're like, I wasn't stealing the candy bar. I was stealing the bag of chips. And it's like, no, it's bad. What are you doing? Like, that is not what we're talking about. God, it's just so rough. That is not a defense. All right. Just right. I assume that we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see if we can go 3 for 3.
I had some options. And so I'm going to go with this one because I feel like this is the right one for me today, but I had 3 written down just in case. I'm going to go with Equanimeous St. Brown. Okay. So he had two very nice catches and then was able to power past the first down marker to extend drives. They were both like he had to make a play after he caught the ball and knew where the first down marker was and was able to pick it up. He is not the top option in this passing tree, but every once in a while they go to him. Yes, he had the big drop in a game, you know, earlier this year. I understand that, but this is what you expect out of a veteran player. He understands the system. He's playing. I think he's a pretty smart football player, yeah. Right? And he is able to get those two first downs, extend drives. I was really impressed with both plays, and you get two plays from a guy like that. That's exactly what you expect. That's exactly what you want out of a guy like ESB. So I wanted to call him out and give him a kudos. He gets my just right this week.
He was also blocking pretty good again this week. I think he was the push guy on Justin Fields' quarterback sneak there, yep, as well. So he knows his role in the offense. And, you know, I think he's a guy that, again, he's your starting X. I think there's a good chance he's back again next year, but he's back in a reserve role, which I'm fine with. Like you said, he's a smart football player. He is a good blocker. He understands what he's supposed to do out there. He's not going to hurt you much. He's not going to make big plays, you know, but, you know, for who he is, I like that. That's a good just right. For me, I'm going to go David Montgomery.
Okay, that was my other one.
17 runs, 67 yards. He had a touchdown. Ran hard. You know, he's – does he dance a little too much? Probably. You know, he doesn't hit the hole quite as hard as Herbert, but Khalil Herbert is really, really good. I mean, he understands where the crease is. He knows he has to squirt through there as quick as possible. That's who he is as a runner. Montgomery is more of a run through you kind of guy. And he had a lot of yards after contact this week. He had three catches, 54 yards. Now he blocked well in the passing game. He blocked well as a lead blocker for Justin Fields in a run game too. So we saw the overall total package of David Montgomery this week. I think it's too many carries or too many snaps for him. But with Herbert gone, what are you going to go to Treston Ebner?
Going to go to Treston Ebner. Exactly. I am going to run David Montgomery, yes, as much as possible, or I'm going to find somebody else. Ebner is not ready for this. No, that's very not clear. Ebner, no. I'm a no on Treston Ebner until he figures out how to run north-south. But I also want to respect, one, he had the catch down the sideline. We mentioned it. We got to pile that on Monty as well. Great catch out of the backfield on a little
scramble. Good adjustment on his part.
Yes. Also, elite little hand motions from Montgomery this week. He did a little shimmy once, and then he got up one time, and he did a little, like, you know, like he's running in place, like, because he didn't get very much on that run, but he like kept breaking tackles and kind of working his way laterally and, like, you know, gaining inches when he got up and did one of these. And then when he got up from that, after he caught that ball, he, like, I don't know, is he like playing a piano? Like, what was he doing? I got to figure this out.
But he's fired up though.
Yeah. He just had it all the whole game. He was just, every time they'd show him, he was doing something else. Pretty exciting for David Montgomery. Again, I like him. I like the player. So I like running backs, though. I'm a sucker. You know, you want to talk corners and safeties and running backs. I love those guys. I love watching them play. So good stuff. Let's see what else we got. Is that it? We got the show. We all wrapped up.
That's it. We got through it in a nice, crisp 50-ish minutes.
Well, I'm excited about being back in home turf. I think the Bears are as well going to be mostly home for the rest of the year. I think you had a tweet out there, like, they've got this road game coming up. They've got one more that they're going to Detroit. And then otherwise they're at home.
All home. Yeah. So Bills, Eagles, Vikings, Packers.
Yep.
Plus the bye, all home.
So four of the last six are going to be at home. So that's good. I'm going to be at home. I don't know next time I'm going to travel, but it's not going to be the rest of the football season. So the less than stellar audio quality should be a thing of the past. Thanks for sticking with me through that. And
it's weird when your display is less than my display, which is one of the worst probably podcast displays in all of Bears podcasting.
Yeah, we need to up your game. I'm not gonna lie, we're gonna have a team meeting soon, and I'm gonna have an intervention, and I'm going to basically tell all of you, like, Time to step it up, guys.
What I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to publicly shame my wife here because she is more of the decorator of the household. So, you know, I'm going to have to, you know, call her out, my wife, for not us stepping it up here. And
do
I'm
you
saying
need
this so
things to put on your wall? Do you know how much stuff I have?
Put it up. I do have stuff, but there's just, this is nowhere. It's not a good spot.
Is that like a certificate for a Seiko watch? Like, what is that?
That is my wife's witch dungeon. I don't know. It's from Salem, Massachusetts. I'm not even sure what that is.
Okay.
And this is a picture that was painted by someone.
That looks like it's probably an attractive picture, but we can't really see it. We see curtains. We need something better. Is this your final office space? Sorry, this is not good podcast material. We should get out of here.
Let's get out of here. This
Let's
is
get out of here. We'll stick around for YouTube. Yeah. It's holiday week. I'll give my thank you for all of you that are listening to our stuff and sticking with us. We know that this year is not the easiest, but we hope that you're sticking with us and you're getting something out of it because I think that it's fun. But thank each and every one of you for being with us and for listening, for watching us, all that stuff. I hope that you have a nice holiday, whatever that means to you. If that's just football, if it's family, if it's friends, if it's turkey, if it's tofurkey, I don't care. Like, I hope your holiday is good and it treats you well. And thanks for allowing us into your lives a little bit.
Are you back for Bears Over Beers or are you guys taking the holiday?
Good question. I think we're on, but I'll need to confirm.
Cool. Yeah, we have some changes on the podcast channel. We're still kind of working through some stuff. I know Mason will be back with a special Justin Fields update, kind of go in depth on what the shoulder injury kind of means. That's coming up. I know Taylor and Dylan are doing a special early edition of Making Monsters coming up. I may be guesting on Bears Banter with Bill Zimmerman this week, so that should be fun to do. I haven't been on his show in since last season, I don't think so. And then I'll do a Two for Mitch conversation, my usual Friday, but I may kind of knock it out early because of once the report is done, I'm off that day. I may just knock it out real quick. So we'll see. We'll kind of juggle stuff, but the content will be there. We're not going anywhere.
Thanks for sticking with us. We'll see you next week after the holiday. Until then, bear down.